Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So we have some happy-ish news for Theresa May. There have been no resignations since our last podcast. James, Michael Gove has decided to stay put, but despite a slight show of cabinet unity, we are hearing that the letters are getting perilously close to the 48 required to trigger a no-confidence vote. What should we make of the rumours?
I think we should treat everything with caution. Trust but verify, as they used to say during the Cold War. Steve Baker, the kind of lead whip, if you like, of the ERG, the kind of Brexit ultras in the Tory party, he seemed to suggest that the 48 letters were in, and then he kind of slightly backed off and said, well, maybe they'll come in early next week. The note of caution I would insert is this, is I think it is more difficult for them to get to 48 letters than the conventional wisdom has it. But even if they have got 48 letters, I don't think we find out about it until Parliament is sitting again. I don't think Graham Brady's going to pop up on Sunday morning and say, I've now got the 48th letter. So I think wait until Monday, and that's when we'll find out what's going on. I think the kind of good news for Theresa May is that they will find it more difficult to get to 48 letters than the conventional wisdom has it. The bad news is I think she will do worse than the conventional wisdom thinks if the 48 letters do go in.
Fraser, are you getting a whiff of rebellion in the air?
More than a whiff. I mean, today I've spoken to two ministers, one in the cabinet, one not, both telling me that the 48 letters are in, that it has already happened, and that it's now underway. And one of them said that he wants Theresa May to go, but he thinks that this is a grave mistake because it's not ready. He's saying if we strike and if we miss, then we'll be shackled to a corpse for a year. In other words, that if they try to do a no-confidence vote, which she survives, under the Tory party rules, there could be no more confidence votes for a year. Now, I tell you why, like James, I'm not entirely sure whether to believe this. How would they know? How would any minister know if 48 letters had been sent? Graham Brady, who's the chairman of the 22 committee, is the only person who would know. And he doesn't leak. Everybody knows that. So if he did, what he would do, at most, is notify number 10 that a leadership bid could be on the way. That's a sort of gentlemanly thing he would do. We then hear that whips have been called back to London. And this is what's got the minister I spoke to nervous, because he thought not only have they gone too quickly, but that the government will be able to get its retaliation in early. So right now, we can see the signs of Theresa May marshalling her whips, marshalling her forces, having an unfair advantage, and seeing off his threat. Now, what to make of all this? I mean, right now, we're in a political era where nothing is so crazy it couldn't actually happen. So nothing is impossible. Do I believe that the leadership coup is now underway? Not necessarily, but I do believe that a few senior Tories believe it to be true.
Now, I had the pleasure yesterday of seeing the Jacob Rees-Mogg press conference, which was definitely not a coup, as he clarified at several points. But one of the points he made during this was that if they did bring about this no confidence vote, and he has put his letter in and urged others to do so, then even if the Brexiteers lose that vote, it would still be a successful operation because they would have shown that there are 48 MPs that have no plans to vote for this deal. James, is that really the motivation here, or is that just trying to cover themselves in case this happens and they do lose?
I think it is partly the motivation. I mean, obviously for them in the ideal world, they would win the vote. They would defeat her. Or, you know, I think in their series of scenarios, they would either defeat her outright, which I think is highly unlikely, or they would breach the three-figure mark, at which point I think some members of the cabinet would say to Theresa May, look, we've lost the DUP, 100 RNM at backbench against it, time to change tack, and maybe for you to consider your position. Or third, they would hope to show that this can only pass with a huge wholesale number of Labour votes, and that would, given those are, Jeremy Corbyn says that those won't be forthcoming, that then leads to the government saying, okay, right, we actually have to change course here because this deal isn't much of a deal if it can't pass through the House of Commons.
Now, Fraser, when we're looking at whether we are close to a leadership challenge or even a proper coup or attempt to overthrow Theresa May, one of the things that you seem to need is an alternative candidate to Theresa May. Now, I've had Steve Baker, who is a ringleader amongst Brexiteers today, suggesting that he doesn't know who the preferred Brexiteer candidate is yet. It is probably one of, you know, the ministers who have quit the cabinet over Brexit. But what they would probably do is put them all in a room, lock the door, they could decide, and then that's how they would go, because there should only be one Eurosceptic leader candidate. Do you think that's a good plan?
I'm not sure there is any plan, really. And Mrs. Theresa May's great advantage. She's got a lot of critics, but they're still holding out for a hero. They're still are waiting for somebody to be the person who puts things together. And, I mean, let's take the European Research Group. Incredibly clever people there, but they do seem to be shambolically disorganised. I mean, they had their alternative Brexit plan that they had to cancel at the last minute and then publish. Even the act of trying to have a press conference outside Parliament seemed to be a bit much for them yesterday, Katie, as you looked on and saw it for yourself. So really, and I think Theresa May partly got where she is because she has spent a lot of time with sort of articulate chaps in double-breasted suits giving speeches about how we should do this, that and the other, but none of them being able to organise, whereas she carries on. This is her intransigence, her resilience is her great, I guess, her great vice and her great strength. And I am really talking around today. I can hear MPs saying, oh, we're going too fast, will we get the votes, etc. But nobody really is saying, you know, it's got to be Jacob, or it's got to be Jeremy Hunt, or it's got to be Sajid or something. And without that kind of organising force behind the rebellion, it will be split five or six ways. David Cameron had this phrase when he was in government, that a plan beats no plan. And I think that's Theresa May's governing philosophy as well. Right now she's got a plan, it's a bad plan, but it beats no plan. And the rest of them haven't really got a plan, a rival plan. So I think if the exam question was whether Theresa May's deal is awful, that would get a very clear pass mark. Everybody knows it's awful. But if the question is who is going to succeed her, nobody is beginning to get an answer to that now. Now, you might believe that cometh the hour, cometh the man. If there is a sort of leadership coup, then the party will whittle it down, they'll get behind somebody. And right now, a lot of those suggesting alternatives to her Brexit plan believe that something will just come out of thin air. And I'm not so sure.
Now, another thing Theresa May has going in her favour is the fact that she hasn't had any more resignations, at least today. Obviously, we'll update you later if that changes. And there was speculation that there could be a second wave. So figures such as Michael Gove, Penny Mordaunt, and even Chris Grayling were rumoured to be weighing up their options. Now, Michael Gove has decided to stay. He doesn't want to be Brexit secretary, but he is happy to stay in DEFRA. James, is this an endorsement of Theresa May? Is she out of the woods on this, or do you think we could still see resignations?
I think there is a possibility that we could still see more cabinet resignations. I don't think there's a coming today. I think Theresa May is in this very odd situation, which is there are still a bunch of people sitting around the cabinet table who have very grave reservations about her plan. I think one of the other things is the question is, what does she do? How does she persuade people that there is a route to pass this plan through Parliament? I mean, that's kind of one of the big questions. And also number 10, like, wait until you see the future framework document that'll be ready for this summit on November 25th. That will allay a lot of concerns. That does need to allay a lot of concerns. I mean, there is slight shock at how thin the political declaration is. The kind of, someone says to me, I've got no issue what the substance of it is, but the lack of detail is concerning because, again, it implies that these trade talks aren't very advanced and therefore makes it more likely that the UK ends up in this infamous backstop at some point.
And then when we look at that vacancy of Brexit secretary, we're hearing that number 10 do plan to fill it. They're not planning to close down Dexu, which might have saved them some embarrassment. Fraser, do you think we're going to have someone in that brief by the end of the weekend? And also, who have you got your sights set on as the future Brexit secretary?
I cannot think of a more embarrassing job title now than being Theresa May's Brexit secretary. I really can't work out who would have enough lack of self-respect to take that job. I can't believe Michael Gove even considered it for as long as he did. I mean, he made the right stipulation. If it's a genuine job, if you can try to improve the deal, fair enough. But otherwise, it's basically a minister for propaganda. So, no, I'm staggered to think they're still keeping that job, given what a failure the post was and proved to be. And even looking around at those people who are taking a big dent in their credibility by staying in the cabinet in the first place, I can't see which of them would harm their credibility even more by taking that non-job.
James, isn't there an argument this is a perfect job for Liam Fox, given that if the deal is as we expect, if the deal is as we expect, there isn't really going to be a Department for International Trade, is there? We can't really do...
You're right, his job is gone as well.
Deals with third countries. So he might as well just accept that now, put them all in one, and go for Brexit Secretary.
I somehow don't think that's going to happen. I mean, there is a problem, right? First of all, they should abolish this job, right? The Brexit Secretary job. It is clearly a non-job.
Should they not abolish them both?
You're being asked to be a Brexiteer fig leaf.
Do you think there's still a purpose for the international trade?
There might be. And so I think this is the kind of question, which is, there were many reasons why Number 10 were foolish to ask Michael Gove to be Brexit Secretary. The first was that when someone basically says in Cabinet, I'm backing this with a heavy heart because I am so fearful of no deal, you don't turn around to them and say, don't you want to be the person who goes out and sells this to a graceful nation and steers this legislation through Parliament?
It's probably the most positive thing anybody said about the deal in the whole of Cabinet, though.
First of all, that was the kind of displayed a certain lack of emotional intelligence. And the second problem is that the job of Brexit Secretary now is really the kind of no-deal preparations guy. And if I was looking around the Cabinet, if you were basically looking for someone to run a ferry company and order space on commercial shipping and all this stuff, Michael Gove would not be the first person who would spring to mind as a kind of logistics guy in government. I mean, that is what they need. They need someone to do logistics and contingency planning for no deal. That is essentially what the job of Brexit Secretary is now. And so they need someone with that skill set.
And then finally, yesterday we saw Theresa May stand on her feet for about 3 hours as she took lots of questions from MPs. And then today she's on an LBC phone-in where she was subjected to some quite hostile questions from listeners. Fraser, this level of, I suppose, endurance, I mean, some could say it's just sheer stubbornness. Do you think that people will be impressed by the fact she's just keeping on?
Well, I do think people will be impressed. In fact, sitting next to me is our broadcast editor, Cindy Yu. Now, Cindy, let's bring you in here, because if my Twitter feed was correct, you were tweeting your applause at Theresa May, weren't you? She's melted your heart.
Well, someone suggested to me today whether or not I thought her behaviour was statesmanlike. I don't think her behaviour is statesmanlike, but she is so tenacious. She's so tenacious. I'm really impressed. I mean, the fact that she went on LBC this morning, I don't think it was a bad interview, and I don't think it's her forte to speak to people, but I thought she gave good answers. I thought she was able to be polite about hostile questions.
So she's winning you over then?
Yeah, I think I'm a Mayite now. I wasn't a Mayite before this process began.
Just to clarify, Cindy, you're a millennial. Great. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And do join us again, I'm sure, soon when we'll have more twists and turns.